as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And this was the day, the week that Microsoft Office for iPad was finally released.
Yeah.
We've been waiting for this thing for like a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we never had it because Steve Ballmer, the previous Microsoft CEO, did not want to put Office on the iPad. It was all ready to go. So the new guy who's into cloud computing and Microsoft Office 365, which is a cloud-based service, immediately released it. I downloaded it this last week. The apps are free.
Wow.
I'll talk about talk about my experiences with it. But if you want to edit them, you have to subscribe to Office 365. Okay, it's like not really free.
You'll tell us how expensive it is.
I'll tell you how that's going to go. How that's going to go on going on. I'm going to talk this week about some of the ex-hackers, and they're actually quite rich. The guys that, a lot of our entrepreneurs in technology started out as hackers, trying different things, and they honed their skills, and then they finally decided to start a company. And so we'll talk about some of the rich, who the rich hackers are. And today we're going to feature the father of 3D printing.
Mm.
So 3D printing has really been
it's a hot topic.
It's a hot topic now, and it was, he developed this thing back in 1986. He patented the thing.
Really?
So it's been around for a while. Uh-huh. It's just that finally it's getting some notoriety. And on the way in today,
yeah,
I had a tragic event. I dropped my cell phone. Now, and I cracked the glass in the front. And originally I thought that, it wouldn't work. So I don't have a cover on my cell phone. Everybody else has these giant phone covers.
Which looked stupid, I think.
Well, I've been telling everyone, I said, I don't need a foam cover. I like the feel of the nude iPhone. And I don't like to have a cover all wrapped around it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm
with you.
And I said, actually, I'm never going to break my iPhone. And so
here
I am. I'm going to be eating crow all week because now I've got the whole front glass has got these cracks in it. Now the screen is okay. I can use it, but it just, I got to be careful that I don't cut my fingers when I'm swiping across this broken glass, front here, but I'm a little bit put off by this.
Be careful, because I know people who've actually picked up slivers of glass in their finger trying to do that with a broken screen like that.
Yeah, so I better be.
Well, I'm looking at because I've told
what,
you that.
Can I submit a question to my to
please,
you?
How
can I get this fixed?
Well, it's funny because I've actually done this before. There's a place in South Baltimore that does it, and it looks like there's a place in there. There are several places in D.C. There's a website that I'm on now that's called crackedmacscreen.com, and they will repair your cracked screen for your 4S, because that's what you have,
mm-hmm,
for $109. Now, I'm trying to figure out where they are, because the place that I went to in South Baltimore, we just walked in off the street, and you hand them the phone. And the crazy thing is, they actually have longer hours on the weekend than they do during the week. They have maybe one or two days off during the week, because I guess they figure the people are out walking around on the weekend, that's when they drop the phone and break it.
Yeah.
It's kind of a neat idea, but you can get that fixed.
So what happened, I brought in my iPad to sort of show off the new Microsoft Office. I was juggling my iPad, my Tech Talk notes, my iPhone, and boom. I'm glad that I didn't drop the iPad.
Uh-huh.
See, so, if I'd have to drop something, I'd rather drop my iPhone.
Well, this place looks like it is in DuPont Circle, and you need to be there, and it'll take 45 minutes for them to fix your phone, which is pretty neat, because the place I went to, you kind of had to leave it for a couple of hours. But, mm-hmm, you could walk out of here today, drive to DuPont, get yourself a Froyo, and get your iPhone fixed.
Yeah. I really shouldn't have talked about it on the air because now everybody knows that I'm going to be eating crow all week even if I fix it. I could have fixed it and then not told anyone.
I just said nothing. But you know what? Doc, this is a classroom of the airways, as you pointed out to
That's
me,
right.
for the past 7 years.
That's
and
right.
It's all about learning, and we learn by our mistakes, don't we?
We do. And we like to highlight stupidity whenever we can.
It's usually mine, though.
Yeah, but today I've got
it's
a lock.
An accident.
Today
it's
I've
not
got
stupidity.
A lock on it. And, of course, we had a huge, huge,
huge mailbag. Yeah, you just caught me off guard.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Whew. Giant.
You know, oh, no, Doc. You dropped it on the iPhone.
Uh-oh. I hope I don't have glass shards in the mail. But, and it's amazing how heavy our mail is, especially when most of it comes in as email. But these are the heaviest electrons I've ever felt.
It's virtually heavy.
It is extremely heavy. These are heavy-duty electrons. They are. They're probably, high spin.
Exactly.
Okay, we got an email from a regular listener in Bethesda. Dear Dr. Schertz, I've attached an email from Bank of America asking me to verify my account online just by clicking on this hyperlink.
Wrong.
Now, I never did anything with this email because I assume it's spam. Is that correct? Thanks, regular listener in Bethesda. Well, you are correct. It's actually a phishing letter, a P-H-I-S-I-H, phishing letter, P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G. And what they do, they're a whole class of these things. They trick you into logging into a fake bank site or a fake email account page, splash page for an email account, and encouraging you to enter your username and password, which, of course, they capture. And as soon as they capture it, they go log in onto your account, and they hijack your account or whatever they – and if they have your bank account, they might transfer funds. So good thinking. Just delete that phishing email. You are right on the money.
That's right. Exactly.
We got an email from Arnie. Hi, Dr. Schertz. I've attached an article that discusses the Snoopy drone, which can steal data from unsuspecting smartphone users. It was revealed at the Black Hat Security Conference in Singapore. Looks like drones are getting downright nosy and stealing data. You know, Arnie likes to keep track of all the sneaky stuff going on with drones.
Snoopy, I guess, for snooping.
Yeah, Arnie is from Davidsonville, Maryland. Well, and actually I went to that article, and then they actually had a Phantom 2 Vision drone. And they had attached an additional electronic circuitry on it, and it would basically go in and connect with cell phones and capture data from the cell phones. The software that they were using for this has been around for a long time. The innovation was that they put it in a drone, so they could, if there would be there'd be a group of people, you could fly overhead of the group of people, and you might be able to grab some data from their cell phones without them even knowing it. So it's a different delivery method, and it's just going to show you that drones are becoming commonplace and used for almost everything, including bad stuff.
Yeah,
we got an email from Benoit. Dear Doc, our family needs your help to settle long discussions on which browser is the best of all worlds. More specifically, my son-in-law, Chris, recently switched to Firefox because he wanted to get himself out of the Google environment because he didn't want them tracking everything he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
However, he just stumbled across this article about Firefox's vulnerabilities. It describes the results that Pwn2 Own 2014, an annual computer hackers conference in Vancouver. Mozilla's Firefox was proven yet again that it's the least secure browser of the top four. Mozilla's Firefox actually had four zero-day vulnerabilities.
Huh.
And these vulnerabilities, if they were in the wild, would allow a hacker to do just about anything they wanted with your computer if you visited a specifically crafted website. The other browsers, Chrome, Internet Explorer, and Safari, fared better, although they did hack them to some degree. Well, actually, Firefox is weaker. It has weaker security, and it's generally attributed to the lack of a sandbox. Now, a sandbox is a shell or a firewall around a piece of software that keeps it segregated from the rest of the operating system. So what happens is this browser is operating in the sandbox. So if you actually can hack the browser and it's in a sandbox, they cannot take control of your computer because the sandbox firewall insulates the browser activity from the rest of the operating system. It turns out that Firefox was developed at a time when security wasn't that big of a deal, and so they never really put it into a sandbox. And now to redesign Firefox from the ground up in a sandbox would be a lot of work. And Firefox is open source software right now, so like there's no company behind it. So it would be a huge job to transition to it. And so, yes, indeed, Mozilla's Firefox is much more vulnerable. It turned out that Chrome was developed after everybody recognized this issue. So Chrome, from the ground up, was built in a sandbox. Mm-hmm. In a sandbox, and it was also built for speed. Microsoft Internet Explorer was built prior to the sandbox era, but because they wanted to come up to speed and were competing with Chrome, when they went from IE8 to IE9, they instituted the sandbox. So if you're running IE9 and later, you're going to be in a sandbox. So Internet Explorer, Chrome are actually fairly secure, and much more secure than Firefox. So I would probably not use Firefox. I would use, I think, Chrome. Now,
interesting.
I recognize that, and so you could either use Chrome or Internet Explorer. I actually go back and forth. I use both of them.
Yeah.
The Chrome is faster.
It is absolutely faster.
It's faster, and it also renders HTML, the latest HTML, I think slightly more accurately than Internet Explorer, which is not quite as attuned to the standards as Chrome. But you do have this issue of Big Brother. Big Brother. This would be, he's called Google. I call it, true G-Man. You know, that's the true G-Man. Big Brother is tracking you. So here's when I use, whenever you log into, whenever you open up Chrome, they want you to log in.
Yeah.
I never log in.
Mm-hmm.
I do not log into Chrome. See, if you log into Chrome, then you can click a button and then your Gmail comes up.
Right.
So I don't want to have any of the services that I used, when I do it with login. So I just don't log into Chrome, and I make a point not to log into any of the Gmail services. I'll log into Gmail, but then I'll log out. So
okay.
As I'm surfing the web, I'm more or less anonymous, although Google, since they can gather so much data in your searches, they may be able to sort of reverse engineer it and figure out who I am. So if you're worried about that, you could just use another search engine. But I'd say, given the vulnerabilities of Firefox, I think I'd stick to Chrome. So that was a good question, though.
Yeah, you know what? The things that Chrome does don't seem to bother me too much because, I can count on it working whenever I open up a Google browser.
So, yeah.
I guess if it was something else, it would bother me. And Gmail just is so good that I'm willing to put up with their garbage right now.
Yeah, so I've had Gmail since it was in beta.
I have Gmail because you invited me to it.
Yeah.
And that's the only I've never used anything else since then.
So that's when you got it when it was still in beta.
Mm-hmm.
Because I got it when it was in beta.
Yeah,
and I got it from a Google employee.
And you had to send me an invitation in order to get it. So it was,
yeah. But but I had to buy them off in order to get the Gmail account.
Did you really?
When it was just they were very limited and only employees had it. So what
but
I did?
You did it. It was academic testing.
No, what I did at that time, our culinary department. This week, the locusts were out, and the culinary department made chocolate covered locusts.
Oh boy.
So I went to the site, and this particular guy had had a Gmail account, and I said, look, I'd love a Gmail account, and I'll send you a box of chocolate covered locusts made by my culinary department.
Seems like a small price to pay from the way I'm looking at it. So I'd be happy to pay part with
and
my
so,
boxes.
And so what I bundled that up into into a FedEx because I didn't want the locusts to go bad on
no.
the way.
No, did you package it in like dry ice or something?
Yeah, I shipped it out and I got the my Gmail account and I was really quite happy. He never told me whether he was happy with the chocolate covered locusts.
Because they killed him, probably. He couldn't, couldn't respond.
I never really heard anything about that. we got an email from Alice in Wonderland.
Frequent writer.
She's a frequent writer, yes. Dear Dr. Church, thanks for giving the IT community a reason to rise and shine on Saturday AM. Well, thank you, Alice. I've always wanted to learn how to send anonymous email. Uh-oh, Alice. What are you up to? And in the past, I did have hush mail. And I set it up and I downloaded it after first installing Tor, which is actually keeps your IP address anonymous. I'll talk a little about that. But I didn't use my hush mail account. And then when I went back, they want to charge me $49 a year for the account. Are you aware of any other anonymous email accounts that I can establish that are free? Thanks. Alive and well in Wonderland, Alice. Well, Alice, you're right on track. First of all, using Tor is a very good idea. That keeps your IP address anonymous whenever you're talking to the email server. Tor, by the way, is short for the Onion Router, in case you want to know that. That's
the
really
Onion Router.
The Onion Router. That is something that you can just talk about, like a cocktail party. It can come up. You want to have anonymous surfing. You say, well, I use Tor. The Onion Router.
Oh, what is that?
It's a free system of software and servers around the world that enables anonymous internet traffic via a decentralized, encrypted peer-to-peer relay process.
I'm going to have to write that on the palm of my hand, though.
Yeah, you wrote that down.
What is Tor?
Tor, yeah. But then I use it with Hushmail. Now you can still set up a free Hushmail account. Now, this is the deal, Alice. When you get the free Hushmail account, you have to log in every 3 weeks or you lose it. So just you're going to have to give them another email address.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can get 25 megabytes of storage. And as long as you log on to Hushmail every 3 weeks, you can keep your account. But if you don't log on every 3 weeks, then it's gone. So, and if you want to get an account where you don't have to log on every 3 weeks, it costs you $49 a year. Now there are other anonymous emails. You can go to Anon email, A-N-O-N email. It's actually a web interface, and it hides the messages sourced by relaying the message several times before it reaches the destination. It doesn't even appear to log IP addresses. So technically you wouldn't need to use Tor, but if you really want to double check this thing, use Tor and then go to a non-email. And that seems to work. Now the drawback with a non-email, and you can just Google that, A-N-O-N email, a non-email, is that it doesn't support attachments. Now if you want kind of the ephemeral email, there's the 10-minute mail. What you do from the point you open the browser on the page, it assigns you a temporary email address. It's good for 10 minutes. So you send somebody an email, and in 10 minutes, the entire record of the email disappears.
It's like that photo sharing thing we talked about a few weeks ago. What was that called? Do you remember?
Yeah.
Where it all goes away after 10 minutes.
It's gone, yes. So that's the those would be two options for you. So I couldn't tell from your email whether you have to do attachments or whether you need to have somebody send back the email to you, but good luck.
Do you have a Hushmail account?
No, I don't have a Hushmail account.
Are you going to get one now after this?
Well, I'm thinking I should,
Testing purposes
again. I think I need a Hushmail account. But, I'm thinking I guess you could set up a Gmail account, but the Gmail account has to tie to another email account.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you use Tor, it's going to tie back to some email account. So everything ties back to an email account. So you need at least one anonymous email account. So that's if you want to be totally anonymous.
Sure.
Now, here's the problem. I did a little research on Hushmail.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Hushmail's out of Canada, and they released data to the Canadian government.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
So they're not really Hush.
So it's not really as Hush as you think. but maybe if you've got some... neighbor and you want to say, hey, buddy, you've got bad breath, and you don't want to tell them personally, and you want to send it like by email, it might be good. It might be good enough for that. But this 10-minute account could be good for that, too. We got an email from Dick Mondro. Dear Doc, here's a new use for your drone. You know, I'm really attracting a lot of drone emails.
You
these
are,
days
yes. Because, well, it's fun.
Because, you know, because I love to fly that drone. This guy, according to Dick Mondro, flew his drone into an erupting volcano and took great pictures. Love the show, Dick Mondro. Well, I looked at that video, Dick. That's really a fantastic video. Now, I'm not ready to fly my drone into a volcano yet. I mean, he was going right into the gases, and I'm thinking, you know, that could damage the camera. But he got really close to the volcano, and there were ashes spewing out.
Most of the machine is plastic, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I would be a little worried about it, but he managed to escape without getting any damage. I'll post a link to that video on.
I was just about to open it up here so I could see.
So I'll post a link to that video so you can do that if you go to the show outline once we get it uploaded. But you know, maybe the next time I'm in Hawaii, I'll go to the Big Island and fly over the volcano because it's. It doesn't spew, the Big Island. I mean, the lava just kind of oozes out. So so it might be a little safer for drone activity over there. We got an email from Sam in Vienna. Dear Tech Talk, I have a friend in Australia who does not receive my emails, nor can I get his. Neither of us has marked the other one as spam, so what's going on? Thanks, Sam in Vienna. Well, Sam, more than likely the email service used by your friend in Australia has been blocked or blacklisted by your email service. The email service used by your friends has blocked or blacklisted your email service for some reason. Now, they didn't block your specific address, but the email service in general. And there are some email services that just might have too much spam they send out, and maybe their mail servers were just listed as spam servers. That happens on occasion. I know we've got to be very careful when we use, say, Constant Contact, when we send out emails for Constant Contact, we'd be very careful that we don't send out spam, and it's a totally validated list because Constant Contact does not want their servers to be blacklisted as spam. So that could be the problem. So what I would suggest as a test would be to set up a different account, like a Gmail account. And if it works, just use the Gmail account. And you can have email to your Gmail account forwarded to your account.
Email to your Gmail.
Yeah, so Gmail will forward mail, and so you could have it forwarding to your account so you know whenever they would send you an email. But then you would have to, if you'd want to respond to them, you would have to go to Gmail, log into Gmail, and send an email back. That you could test that out to see whether that would fix the problem. We got an email from Alex in Ashburn. Dear Tech Talk, I have a file that contains some information. I want to open it, but I don't have the right program installed in my computer. The file is a .iso. How do I open it? What kind of file is this anyway? Alex in Ashburn. Well, Alex, an ISO file is just a disk image. The name ISO is taken from the ISO 9660 file system used in CD-ROM media. Now, you can create a disk with an ISO file, but you've got to have a particular program to burn the disk. And the program will take and read the ISO file and will burn the disk. You just can't copy the ISO file to a read-write DVD or read-write CD. So one program you could use would be ImageBurn, ImageBurn. It will open the ISO file and you can write it to a rewritable DVD or CD, depending on the size. I don't know if it's a CD or a DVD, but you could write either style, just depending on what it is. You have to make certain that your reader supports it. Now, if you just burn the ISO file to the disk directly, you'll see .iso there, and it's not going to do you any good. So. There This is actually how Linux. If you download a Linux distribution, if you'd want to install Linux on your machine and play with it, you download the ISO file, and then you would use the program like ImageBurn to create your installed disk for Linux. This is very commonly used to distribute CDs and DVDs. Now, you can also read the ISO file directly, and it looks like another volume, like you're mounting another volume. Now, it's basically not read-write. It's just read-only. And there's one product called Daemon Tools, D-A-E-M-O-N Tools. And using this utility, you can mount the ISO file, and it looks just like an extra drive on your machine, and you can just read it. Those would be two ways to do it. One way you create the CD, one way you read it directly with the file. But anyway, best of luck. Great question. We love your emails.
We do indeed.
You can email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. And I just noticed I got one more Facebook post from Ken Hutchison, dated March 22nd, last week's show. He said, Jim, I don't remember hearing the rat story before. This was this
because you hadn't.
Yeah, and I don't know when it was broadcast the first time.
Because it wasn't.
It wasn't. It was actually new material last week, Ken, and so that's why he'd never heard it before. And then he went on to say, why are you laughing at that criminal activity? It's not funny. It's infuriating. Actually, Jim, you're right. I don't think we were laughing at it. There must have been something.
No, it was just the term was funny, but not the activity.
But I think you are absolutely correct. It is infuriating because that guy was breaking all the rules.
Absolutely.
And thanks for your Facebook post.
And thanks
Ken.
For listening.
Thanks for listening.
And, Doc, how would folks send us their emails?
They can send us their emails by emailing techtalk@stratford.edu, and that'll be forwarded directly to me, and I'll either answer you directly or cover it on the show.
Exactly. And now you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. It's Saturday morning, 9 a.m. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., 820 a.m., 107.7 FM HD2, online at federalnewsradio.com, and, of course, techtalkonline.com. We'll be back with more of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to feature Chuck Hull. Chuck Hull is known as the father of 3D printing. That would be three-dimensional printing. Chuck was born May 12, 1939, somewhere in the United States. I couldn't pin down the exact state. Chuck's biographical information was
a little bit sparse,
a little bit sketchy, but I know that he was born in the U.S. somewhere. Chuck Hull received a Bachelor of Science degree in engineering physics from the University of Colorado, and an honorary doctorate in engineering from Loughborough University in UK. In 1983, Hull was developing UV-curable resins for a small business. It was called Ultraviolet Products in California. He was creating tough coatings for tables. using UV lamps. They would put the coating on it, then they would cure it with UV. That was the mm-hmm. general idea. He suggested a new way to use UV technology for rapid prototyping to his boss. And Hull was given a lab to play around with during his evening hours and weekends. Hull experimented for months with different photopolymers. These are polymers. These are acrylic-based polymers that are liquid until they're hit with UV light. He got the process to work late one night in 1983, and he was able to build up layers and start with his first example of 3D printing. He immediately called his wife. He was home. She was in her pajamas, and she said, "This had better be good."
Yeah, right.
Chuck,
you woke me up for this.
This had better be good.
You're making plastic down here?
That's right. So she went downstairs, and he showed her this invention, and she said, "Okay, Chuck, that's fine, but what good is this?"
Mm-hmm.
So he went back, and he made her a cup, which now she still has. She still has the original cup that he made for her. And when they have the 30th anniversary of, I guess the 30th anniversary was actually
last year.
She brought out the cup, and she drank out of the first cup that was made in 1983 for her. I don't think she had on her pajamas though. But I think she probably was dressed formally by then.
Right.
Hull coined the term stereolithography in his patent, which was 4575330, which was issued March 11th, 1986. Took him 3 years to file the patent. Now, the good news is, because he's working at night on his own time, it's his. It doesn't belong to, what was the name of that company? Ultraviolet Products. So Chuck was a smart man. He did that at home. Now, he defined stereolithography as a method and apparatus for making solid objects by successively printing thin layers of ultraviolet curable materials. Now, he realized that this concept was not limited to liquids and therefore gave it a generic name, stereolithography, and filed broad patent claims covering any type of material capable of solidification, or any material capable of altering its physical state. So you could put down, say, powder titanium, and then you could melt it with a laser. So it covered everything. It was very, very broadly written patents. That's why he is the father of 3D printing. Now, in late 1986, Hull co-founded 3D Systems in Valencia, California, with Doug Neckers. Now, Doug Neckers was the CEO of the Spectra Group Limited. Chuck Hull served as Executive Vice President and Chief Technology Officer for 3D Systems. Since that first initial attempt, materials have improved drastically. The original polymers would shrink whenever they were hardened by UV light, and they were very brittle.
And I bet that microwave cup is not, that plastic cup is not microwave safe.
I don't think so. It was very brittle because it was one of the original plastics.
Sure.
You know, I'm hoping he's going to give his wife a better cup one of these days.
I would hope so.
But now so the problem is with shrinkage, you had to actually design it to be a little bit larger to anticipate the shrinking, which made 3D printing problematic. Now the new polymers don't shrink. It's very convenient. Mm-hmm. And instead of being brittle, they're tough. So there's been a real significant improvement in the core materials that were used. Now the company is now the leading provider of commercial and household 3D printers and design production tools for digital manufacturing. 3D Systems' most recent innovation is a $1,300 cube printer that makes plastic objects such as toys and jewelries, and it's marketed to consumers.
No kidding.
So for only $1,300, Jim, you could have a 3D printer in your house.
For the price of a drone, you could have a printer in your house.
You know, that's right. That's exactly.
I'm surprised you haven't gotten one of these yet.
Yeah, I don't know. For the price
Just
of a
think,
drone.
You could make the grandkids all kinds of stuff with this.
Yeah.
But only after you get your iPhone.
Now, when Cube, when, when, When Chuck got his first cube printer at home, you know, he wanted to test it out.
Of course.
The first thing he made was a cover for his iPhone.
You're kidding.
And so I'm thinking, if I'd had the 3D printer, I'd have made a cover for my iPhone.
You
and then my iPhone wouldn't be broken.
No.
I should have covered this story last week.
You should have.
So there we go. It's a big, big deal.
Except we had to talk about Rat last week.
That's right. We had to talk about Rat last week. And It's a serious crime.
It is a serious crime.
We don't really
know. No, we're not
going to
joke about it.
No. Now, he was inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame in 2014. He was given the Economist Innovation Award for his pioneering role in 3D printing technology. Now, 3D Systems made $92 million in 2011, and they made they grossed $350 million in 2012. So you can see they're really ramping up. So this is just an exploding field. Now, I only could get his salary figures for 2011. I couldn't get his, he doesn't share his bank account with me.
No.
But in 2011, Chuck Hull made $307,000 base salary, and then he received an additional $800,000 in restricted stock options for like a total of about $1.1 million. So
that seems kind of low.
Yeah, but you know, but his wife's happy,
and she has a great cup.
She's got a great cup, and she says, you know, Chuck, it was worth coming down in my pajamas that night.
Maybe he'll print her some polymer pajamas at some point.
It could be. So there you know, more. All you wanted to know about Chuck Hull, the father of 3D printing.
I have a couple of other fun facts. I went to his bio on the 3D Systems website, and it says he is originally from Colorado. Now that's a big place. So it doesn't say where.
That could be why he went to the University of Colorado.
Because, exactly. His wife's name is Antoinette.
Antoinette.
And one of his hobbies is he's a pilot. He's a private pilot.
Oh.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. So the drone was not that far off.
It was not that far off. Maybe he'll make his own airplane out of plastic one day.
He might
3D print. And you said you can use... titanium would probably be too heavy for aircraft parts, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Could be.
Okay. All right. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. I hope you were just paying attention to what we were talking about, because we're going to ask a question very shortly in the pop quiz. And if you get the answer, you will get a free prize from us, a great little prize. So stay tuned. Tech Talk continues in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, online at federalnewsradio.com and techtalkonline.com. We'll be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to the Classroom of the Airways. Not really a radio show.
No.
And those of you that are regular listeners already know that. And so you already suspect that we're going to do something special today to assess whether you've learned anything. We're going to have the pop quiz.
Mm-hmm.
If you get the correct answer to the pop quiz, you win two tickets to fine dining, the Escoffier Dining Room, the Karim Dining Room. And all you have to do is listen and then communicate with us at the appropriate time. Earlier in the show, I talked about Chuck Hull, who was the father of 3D printing. What is the first object that he printed with 3D printing after he invented the process? And this was a particular item that he gave to his wife for coming down that first night of the invention in her pajamas.
I think you've explained it thoroughly so that people should get that answer.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, if you have that answer, you need to call us right now. If you're calling from someplace west of Colorado, it's 877-936-9333. If you're calling from east of the campus at Loughborough University, it's 877-936-9333. Of course, the wild card line for everybody else is 877-936-9333. Doc, you know the problem with the pop quiz is?
What's that?
We award people who get the proper answer, but people who don't participate or get the wrong answer, we can't take points off.
They get an F.
But we can't give it to them.
No, we track all the listeners.
Oh.
We track all the listeners, and we've got the great grade book in the cloud. And they get an F.
So there's cloud grading going on.
That's
here.
That's right, the great grade book in the cloud. That is exactly right. And of course, if you don't want to reach us with the Plano telephone system,
oh, I forgot,
the POTS line. And if you're calling from Siberia, you can use Skype. Simply connect to Tech Talk Radio 1, and your call will be forwarded directly to the studio.
How about
free of charge?
In Sochi, Russia.
Sochi, Russia would work perfectly.
For Skype.
It would also work in Crimea. It would. If you call from Crimea, it would work.
So like anywhere, really, you could use Skype.
That's right.
Even here in the United States, you could use Skype.
You could even use that, yes.
Or you could just call 877-936-9333 on your regular POTS line.
You could.
Or your non-broken iPhone.
That's right. Mm. You know, if I try to make a phone call with my iPhone now, I'm probably going to get glass slivers.
In your fingers.
So what I'm going to have to do, I think, is plug it into my car and then use the navigation.
So
use the,
does that mean you'll have to drive the car into the house later today until you get your new iPhone?
Yeah,
the car will have to go to the office with you?
It's going to be a major problem. Yeah,
you need to get that fixed.
Yeah, I think at home maybe I'll just use Skype on my computer till I get this phone going.
Because you could use that anywhere.
Yes, that's exactly right.
All right.
Well, earlier, of course, we talked about that, and you know, we've talked over the years about domain names that have been reselling. Now, for years and years and years, do you know what the most expensive domain name was?
Sex.com, wasn't it?
Sex.com was like the king of the domain name. Mm-hmm. Sex.com, like a King Kong of the pricing. And I'm telling you, in recent times, Sex.com has been dethroned.
No kidding.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. So, the number one domain name, which was sold for $35 million in 2007. $35 million.
Where's the drum roll when I need it?
And it was sold by HomeAway. The number one domain name is vacationrentals.com.
Well, in lack of, we don't have the.
Okay, here we go. Vacationrentals.com.
Or just this. That's the only other musical instrument I have.
Who would have thought that vacationrentals.com could beat out sex.com? It's just unbelievable.
Well, there's so many things I could say that I'm not going to right now. I'll just let you continue on.
And the number two domain name that went for $30 million in 2012, privatejet.com.
How is this even possible?
I'm thinking somebody is a total idiot. Now, sex.com was recently resold, by the way.
Really?
And it was resold in 2010 for $13 million.
Which is paltry compared to
vacationrentals.com of $35 million. I mean, I'm telling you, sex.com is really going down in stature fast.
Mm-hmm.
Then number three, this probably makes sense, hotels.com.
Mm-hmm.
That was purchased for $11 million in 2001.
But in 2001 dollars, that's a lot of money.
See, the other thing is, you know, well, the two It was really a try. It was really kind of a duo of like the king of the domain name. Sex.com and porn.com kind of went together.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns
and
out
so that,
that
brings us to well, not quite yet.
No, yeah.
But you know, but hotels.com kind of goes with sex and porn. Never mind.
Well, yeah, I guess they sort of go. And then and then fund.com is 9.99 million. That went in 2008. And then the 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and the number 6 one on the list, porn.com, went for 9.5 million.
Right.
And I'm telling you, porn and porn.com and sex.com used to be at the top.
So, I guess our priorities as a nation are being rearranged.
I think this is a good sign that priorities are shifting. Don't you, you think, Jim? I mean, I think in the beginning the internet was like focused on the wrong thing. Now it's broadening its
like
interest
useful
base.
Stuff like vacations and
yeah, vacations.
And getting private jets.
Yeah, you need a jet to fly to your vacation house. So the next one after porn.com is FB.com,
mm-hmm.
which, of course, Facebook. That's short for Facebook. And that was bought by Facebook for $8.5 million. Can you imagine the guy that just said, I think I'll just register FB.com. He got 8.5 million.
Wow.
Then the next one's on the list is diamond.com, business.com, beer.com.
So beer,
7
porn,
million.
Sex, and hotels all go together.
That's right. Beer.com, $7 million. Slots.com, $5.5 million. Casino.com, $5.5 million. Toys.com, $5.1 million, was bought in 2009 by Toys R Us.
Really?
And this is interesting. Korea.com. Would you think Korea.com would
no.
be that hot? Korea.com was bought for $5 million in 2000. So there you go. The 15 most expensive domain names in the system.
Amazing. We have a contestant on the phone here. Let us go to line number 3. This is Don, who is calling us from, bear with me 1 second. Don is in Bowie. Good morning, Don. How are you, sir?
I am fine, sir.
Good. Good, thank you. Dr. Schertz, go ahead and ask
yeah,
the question.
So earlier
please.
In the show, we talked about Chuck Hull, father of 3D printing. What was the first item that he made after making the 3D printing discovery, and he gave that item to his wife?
That would be a cup.
That is correct. You win two tickets to fine dining, the Scoffier Dinner with the Creme Dining Room. Stay on the line and give your name and email address to Andrew, and we'll get those tickets out to you next week.
Don, thanks a lot. Stand by. You'll be turned over to Professor, I'm sorry, I keep promoting him as Adjunct Professor Andrew Mitchell,
yes.
in charge of a prize. Never mind. I need to stop talking because I can't. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and 107.7 FM HD2. We will be back with more right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tysons Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. Let's talk about another 3D printing project.
Mm-hmm.
Doctors at the University Medical Center in Utrecht, I don't know where Utrecht is.
I think that's Germany.
Germany, have saved a woman's life by carrying out the first skull transplant using plastic parts built in a 3D printer. The unnamed 22-year-old patient was suffering from a rare condition that caused the inside of her skull to grow extra bone, which squeezed her brain. The new skull was precisely created using 3D printing, which using a customized program. Now, this not only had very great benefits cosmetically, but the patients often have a better brain function as compared with older methods where they didn't, where they just sort of made approximate fits. The surgeons worked with Australian 3D printing firm Anatomics, which used a CAT scan, CT scan, to determine the precise shape of the patient's skull. And then they printed out a copy in acrylic and modified it to remove the unwanted growth on the inside. They took off most of her cranium and then fitted the artificial replacement in a 23-hour operation.
Wow.
There's going to be a lot of this 3D printing stuff used for medical purposes. It's really a great technology.
Mm-hmm.
Office for iPad is finally out. And better late than never. Now, this move, of course, was possible because Office is out because Ballmer is out. And Ballmer just didn't want to support Microsoft, didn't want to support Apple at all. Now, the software is here 4 years after the release of the first iPad, 6 months after Apple made its own productivity applications free to new iPad owners, and nearly 1.5 years since Microsoft released its own tablet without a touch-optimized version of Office.
Huh.
Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote occupy in that order the first four spots in the top charts for free applications in the iTunes store. I haven't downloaded OneNote yet, but I did Excel, PowerPoint, and Word. Now, each of them successfully combines the main functions of Windows of Office for Windows applications with elements that make them feel at home on an iPad. Microsoft ribbon, which is all the features at the top, is fully intact. But this ribbon, you can touch it, so it feels like a real touch interface.
Hmm.
All the applications, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote, they all look and act consistently. All you have to do, as with a Google iOS application, when you sign into one of the Office apps with your Microsoft ID and password, it'll sign you into all of them. Now, each application gives you a few features fewer features in the desktop version, but they have most of the features that you'd want. Word, for example, you can easily change fonts, font sizes, margins, footnotes, alignment, create numbered lists. It's simple to create tables, which is hard to do in some of the other word processing systems. You can insert pictures from your camera roll. They also allow you to track changes. Now, each application offers you a number of templates on creating a document. Now, here's the rub. Okay, the applications are free, but with the free application, you can only read documents. If you want to edit documents, you have to pay.
Ah.
Okay, that's the deal. And if you want to edit documents, you have to basically subscribe to Office 365, which is the online version of Office. And then all your documents are stored in the cloud, either at SkyDrive, or it could be, or some variation of the cloud storage that Microsoft has. Now, the subscription to Office 365 is $5 a month. But that's good for multiple devices. So you could have Office 365 on more than one iPad. Hmm. You could have it on your desktop at work. And so it works for multiple devices. And the nice thing is everything is synchronized. You make a change to your document, say, on your iPad, and it uploads it to the cloud, then you open up Office 365 on your desktop, and the document's already synchronized through the cloud. So it's actually not a bad system. This is demonstration that Microsoft is doubling down on cloud technology. Now, one of the major problems of this, though, is the lack of printing support. Now, these apps will not print through Apple's AirPrint.
Mm-hmm.
They will not print through Google's Cloud Print. If you need to make a hard copy, you've either got to sync it with your OneDrive and then go to your desktop and print it, or you got to email it to yourself.
Sure.
and then print it from an actual desktop. That's probably a problem, and Microsoft should fix that. Now, Microsoft spent a lot of time saying how they would prefer, how they would preserve all the formattings. See, one of the big problems I had on my iPad is my CFO would send me all these spreadsheets with tabs, and the numbers application that I have with the Apple application wouldn't display the tabs correctly. So it was, you know, it was very hard for me to look at a complicated spreadsheet on my iPad. Now with Excel, I was just looking at Excel this morning, and I can display tabs without any trouble, which is really quite nice. Mm-hmm. So there you go, Office for iPad. You can download it free. You can read documents. You can read all those tabs on Excel, and you won't have any problem working with that at all.
Time is a little tight. Why don't we keep it here, and we'll just finish out the show, because you have other stuff to talk about.
Yeah, let's talk about, you know, U.S. giving up control of the Internet. I didn't really get into the details last week, but on March 14th, the U.S. officials announced they plan to relinquish the federal government's control over administration of the Internet. Now, this would change the long-running contract between the Department of Commerce and the Internet Corporation for Assigned Numbers and Names, which is ICANN. These are the guys that monitor the domain names and all of that stuff. And that's a California-based nonprofit group. I think they're California-based because that's where, you know, Vint Cerf is now, and and a lot of the original research on the Internet was done in California. Now, the contract is set to expire next year but could be extended if the transition plan is not complete. Now, the practical consequences of this decision are hard to determine exactly. Now, politically, the move could alleviate a rising global concern the United States controls the web and takes advantage of its oversight position to spy on the rest of the world. So I think this NSA scandal was not good for the U.S. U.S. officials have set several conditions and an indeterminate timeline for the transition from federal government authority, saying the new oversight system must be developed and it must win the trust of critical stakeholders around the world. An international meeting was organized by ICANN was held in Singapore on March 23rd. Business groups and others have long complained that ICANN, as a decision maker, has been basically using domain names just to make money, because they basically get a commission on all these domain names. And they created all these wild variations of new kinds of domain names. I think it was just a money-grubbing scheme. And businesses didn't like it because they kept having to buy more and more and more domain names just to protect their brand. And the U.S. government would like to have some kind of check on these processes. That's one of the issues. Now, the U.S. officials said their decision had nothing to do with the NSA spying revelations, but I think the timing did. They're saying that there have been plans to do this since ICANN's creation in 1998. Concerns about ICANN's stewardship spiked in recent years amidst the expansion to hundreds of new domain names. I think if this transition is done correctly, we will not have any problem, but it's the movement of finally the maturation of the Internet to become a truly distributed global enterprise. Well, the time is up. We love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu and check out the Stratford programs by going to the website www.stratford.edu.
Tuned in later. Would like to hear the show again. We'll be replaying Tech Talk at 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. See you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.